Hello there, you're listening to the Watson's Daily Podcast with me, Peter Watson, on Monday the 29th of January. Today I am joined by Duncan Balcon, who is a Watson's Daily Ambassador. Hey Duncan, how are you doing?
Hi Peter, I'm very well thanks, how are you?
Not too bad, thank you. Welcome to 2024.
I was going to say, it feels weird to be saying it, but Happy New Year on the 29th of January.
That's right, absolutely. So obviously we've been away for a while. Obviously, I've been back on the odd podcast here and there. And there are actually more podcasts that I did do over the period that I was kind of off, as it were, and they'll be coming very soon. So you'll see some new stuff here. Anyway, let's get to it. So what story did you find most interesting from today's Watson's Daily?
Yeah, so I think because people are already fed up with it being the 19th week of January, I've picked... It does seem to go on forever, doesn't it, the month of January? I've seen so many memes over the last few days about people going, oh, good news, guys, only 73 days left. So I've decided, because that's the general feeling, I think, in the world at the moment, that I'm going to pick a story that kind of talks about summer holidays, because, let's lighten the mood a little bit.
Exactly. Got to keep it light.
So it's a story from the FT about travel groups and the risk they are posed with tourists seeking cooler summer holidays compared to previous years, and the fact that actually these travel groups are doing quite a bit now to mitigate these risks and to leave themselves in a stronger position. So the UN's World Tourism Organization has predicted that tourism will return to pre-pandemic levels this year, which is good news for the industry. However, due to kind of massive heat waves and wildfires in quite a few countries recently, Greece, I think, probably most memorably last summer for us, that was all over the news for ages, wasn't it? And there was absolute devastation caused by those. And they're saying as a result, travellers are going to think more about cooler destinations in the summer, such as kind of your Iceland, your Denmark, the rest of Scandinavia, really, and maybe look at these warmer destinations at other times of year.
Yeah.
So not when they're at their peak heat and therefore their peak risk for, being trapped by a wildfire, which I would imagine would put a dampener on anyone's summer holiday. Obviously people are kind of keen to avoid that. And so they're looking at different destinations. And the kind of, I think the interesting thing about this is that tour operators have gone, we need to change what we're doing then. So for example, TUI have started to offer some of those kind of southern Mediterranean destinations that were normally peak summer holiday destinations all year round in their packages. Because actually, if you're put off by the extreme temperatures, you're probably more likely to go to one of those places in your spring or autumn sort of holiday block, I guess, whether depending on how your holidays work, whether you've got kids or not, that's different for everybody. But most people normally have kind of times of year they can go on holiday, and people are kind of looking at the spring or autumn, I think, now for those. So it's very much kind of an evolution of the way the industry's working, as they're looking at, like I said, getting back to pre-pandemic levels, which is good, rather than the total overhaul and, oh, everything's going to change. And it's not like reinventing the wheel, but it's definitely kind of a trend that I think is gathering momentum away from these really hot destinations over the summer, and looking at kind of cooler places. One thing I do find interesting about this, though, is the two destinations the FT have quoted. I think this probably tells you like the demographic of people that read the FT. Iceland and Denmark, from what I've heard, are two of the most expensive places you can physically go on holiday in Europe. And they've gone, people are going to these cooler destinations. And in my head, the first thing came up was, Iceland, it's about a tenner for a beer there, isn't it?
I mean, I've never been there myself. I'd love to go, but I've heard, a lot of people say, well, it would be nice to go to Iceland for longer, but they just can't afford it because it's just so incredibly expensive. And I mean, this is quite a number of years ago now, but I did go on a stag do once to Denmark. And it was, to be fair, it was a three day affair. And I did go. In fact, I think a lot of the party were Scottish and they were big drinkers, and I remember thinking, I don't think I can drink anymore. God, for a sustained period of time. I remember that being incredibly expensive. So although I mean, it does sound, it sounds logical that, you know, if global warming is having a permanent effect and we're going to see more of what we saw in the summer happening every summer, then I think, you know, obviously it sounds logical to say, okay, well, people will go to cooler climes. But it does seem that the cooler climes tend to be quite expensive. So I think that's going to, you know, put the mockers on it a bit. I think the other thing, though, is the is actually with regards to the other places. Again, it makes sense to try to spread the holiday season longer, you know, throughout the, rather than really concentrate it in a space of a few months, is to maybe elongate it. It does make a lot of sense, because you know, not everyone wants to go in the height of summer. So I mean, if you've got kids and stuff, it is highly restrictive, if for many reasons, but you know, in terms of holiday, it's very restrictive. So so I do think that that's good. I mean, another thing though that I was wondering when I saw this was, you know, what about, is this going to play into the theme of people going on cruises more potentially? Because we've heard, you know, that actually the cruise industry has recovered from the nightmare of COVID. We saw that the launch of that massive monster of a cruise liner launched on Saturday, called the Icon of the Seas, which is owned by Royal Caribbean. You know, they could potentially emphasize the fact that you can have a temperature controlled holiday on a cruise ship, because if it's too hot, you just go inside and whack up the aircon. Or if it's too cold, you can come in and stick the heating on. So, you know, from that point, that perspective, that's another potential advantage of one of these cruise ship holidays. Now, I would say I've never been on a cruise ship holiday. I've not really thought about it. But then, you know, one of my friends recently went with his family, because I think his dad paid for his brother and sister and their respective families. It was like a multi-generational holiday. And he said he was an absolute convert. You know, he said it was really good, loads of stuff to do. You know, it was great because you could let the kids, I mean, the kids aren't really going to go anywhere. You know, hopefully they're not going to jump off the side. You know, all that kind of stuff. And he said it was really good. And then I, you know, when we were talking just before this, I said, I wonder whether there's any eco credentials to speak of. But sadly, no, that's right, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I did do a quick bit of research while we were talking about this earlier, because we brought up cruise ships as much a great idea. And most of the articles I found did seem to indicate the carbon footprint per passenger of a cruise ship is worse than an aeroplane. However, it does look like this one has set sail with a different type of fuel on board. I've just found an article that says, although environmentalists still aren't fond of it.
50 quid.
I'm just looking at that. They're not fond of it.
Well, 50 quid notes.
Yeah. Just pretty much it. So this, I mean, the Icon of the Seas is powered by eco-friendly liquefied natural gas.
Okay.
Which is apparently 24% more efficient on carbon emissions compared to the usual fuel. That being said, like you said, it's enormous. So it's still going to have a fairly, you'd imagine, large footprint. But it is split, like you said, over near enough 8,000 passengers, which is, I mean, the population of a small town, which for me is mind-boggling. You're floating around with that many people at once. But like you said, Why wouldn't you if it was an option? Because you can visit a load of different places. You can see some fantastic places. I went on a couple of cruises when I was younger, teenager, sort of age younger. And you see some fantastic places. Like you said, everything is there self-contained. There's never a chance of getting bored.
Yeah.
And like I said, actually allows the parents to relax as well, properly relax, because there's nowhere really the kids can go. From memory, the barriers, they're glass, but they're quite high. You'd have to drive quite hard to get over one of them.
Right.
You know, it's like you say, it's definitely surely an option. You think they'll be pushing more. And they don't, obviously, they're not seem to back off on it with launching bigger and bigger boats. The only thing I'd say with things like that, Icon of the Seas, is there are a lot of ports that won't fit into, so it's going to have to kind of drop anchor somewhere out of sea, and then you tend, from memory, you tend to get like the tenders, the lifeboats in and out of the ports because it was.
Don't they just like let you swim? You can sort of like go, all right, we'll park up here, lads. Over the side. It's lovely weather out there.
Yeah. If you check off to the left, that's the island we're stopping at today. Off you go.
Although, actually, I did recommend. So, back in the day, before I ate too many pies, I did used to, you know, do a lot of triathlon and stuff, and I recommended a friend, because I was seriously going to do this, but I didn't in the end. But I recommended to a friend, and he did, to go on a swimming holiday where you go. It was in Greece, and you basically swim from island to island. You know, there's a boat in between. So yeah, you all get on a boat. Everyone sort of has to do a bit of a swimming test to see who can cope with longer swims and stuff like that. And then off you go. They sort of drop you off in the water and you go and swim. And then they meet up on these places and you have, you know, little fire campfires and food around the fire and stuff. Apparently, yeah, he had a great time. So there you go. There's another.
I mean, that does sound good, to be fair. The swimming holiday does sound quite good, in all fairness.
Yeah.
If you like swimming.
Well, clearly, yes. That is one very important thing. I mean, you wouldn't want to turn up and go, right, I'm hoping to learn how to swim on this holiday.
just between these two Greek islands, could you please teach me breaststroke?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah. But anyway, yeah. So that was really good. But yeah. So a nice story to begin the usual return of the usual daily podcast. Oh, by the way, also just to say to people again, I may well have mentioned it. So apologies if I have, but. This year is going to be, we're going to do the 1,000th edition of the podcast. I think it's going to be June or July, but it all depends on the podcast we do, because I've got plans for various specials and different guests and stuff like that, but it's probably going to be June, July. So you know, just listen out for that. Yeah.
So anyway. That was my favourite story in Watson's Daily this morning. What was yours, Peter?
Well, of course, it's Taylor Swift, right? I mean,
of course, you are a big Swiftie. I've heard this about you.
I appreciate her work, you know, but I'm not a fully fledged Swiftie. I can't pretend to be that. But anyway, so this particular story was about X. Blocking Taylor Swift searches over the weekend, because basically someone naughty has done an AI deepfake of Taylor Swift in sexually explicit images, and they look really real. So X, you know, obviously panicked. And they blocked any searches of Taylor Swift. So if anyone was looking up anything innocently for Taylor Swift over the weekend, they might not have found anything. But anyway, the reason why I picked this story is because it does show how, you know, how AI can be used for bad stuff. And I think that, you know, there's another story. So for today, we're doing a three for two special offer on stories from Watson's Daily. But the other
New Year's
story,
sale.
I know, the Year's sale, yeah. So this other other story feeds into another story that was from the FT, which is about India looking to make big tech companies more responsible for the content on their platforms, or responsible for the content on their platform. So up until now, these platforms like Meta and stuff have said, oh, well, it's, you know, it's not, we can't monitor everything. It's up to people. It was freedom of information and expression. We just want people to say what they want. But of course, once you get this, you know, clearly, you know, Taylor Swift will not have agreed to what happened. And this is using her image, manipulating her image and things. And India does, you know, has said that they're putting their foot down and saying that they want big tech to take responsibility. Now, the thing is that I reckon if it had been, I don't know, let's say Liechtenstein, right? So it turned around to Meta. I was going to say Feta then.
Liechtenstein decided they didn't like Feta.
So it would turn around to Meta and say, actually, we don't like the damage that you are potentially doing to young people. So we want you to take responsibility. Meta would just turn around and say, well, yeah, you're Liechtenstein, you know, who cares? By the way, no offense to anyone from Liechtenstein that may be listening to this, right? I'm just saying it as a small country. So, you know,
you would get pretty much a, yeah, whatever, wouldn't you, from the big tech company?
Yes, like, exactly. Yeah,
they cool story, say, whatever.
Yeah. And they'll say, okay, well, we'll just go elsewhere then. Well, the thing is that, you know, this is India. You know, in India, so there's apparently there are 870 million people connected to the internet. 600 million of those use social media out of a total population of 1.4 billion. So there's still room for growth. So the thing is there, if India says, we want you to take responsibility, then big tech is probably not going to say, or I would be very surprised if they say, okay, then we'll just leave India. I just can't see that happening. So the thing is if they do make concessions, it does make me think, are they going to, you know, can other countries then use that as a precedent and say, well, look, it's not fair that you're doing this in India, but not doing this here. What about us? And then they'll, you know, this could change things, you know, along with all the general news of changing, you know, of regulators clamping down on this kind of stuff. I mean, what do you think of that?
Yeah, I think that point you just made is really interesting because it's India and it's a marketplace that big tech is still, I mean, jostling for control in, really. Do you know what I mean? It's not like there is one big tech company that has overarching kind of dominance in India yet. So you feel like they would have to react and do something if India are saying you have to. And let's be honest, Modi isn't in the habit of mincing his words and going, oh, yeah, actually, you know what? I've said that, but yeah, if you don't want to do it. So big tech are going to have to do something. And then, like you said, I think it does. Well, they will end up setting a really kind of an interesting precedent for themselves going forwards because you do it in India. Another country asks you to do it. You're probably going to have to do it there as well. So I think the big tech companies are going to have to do something, but I think they're going to be really wary about what they do because of, like you say, the precedent it sets for themselves. And then thinking about the other story, we always said, I think when we first started talking about AI, that at some point somebody would start using this for negative reasons, for best way of thinking, evil reasons. I don't think that is what we had in mind when we were talking about it. I think we were talking about kind of faking documents and you know, the potential of students being able to use it to pass tests when they hadn't studied and duplicate essays and things. But it's actually terrifying, isn't it, to see, like you said, from what X have said, they've locked it all down because these were alarmingly, like, believable images that, like I said, the person involved had gave no consent. Mm. Obviously, it's not actually a photo of them. It's a little bit scary. You think about some of the things AI can do. I think now, I mean, three months ago was probably the best time to start clamping down on it. Second best time is now. It'll be interesting to see kind of what big tech companies do over both of those issues, I think, and how fast, because I think some things have to be done about both kind of issues quite quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you there. And I think that this year is going to be a major year for the development of AI.
Yeah.
And that I think last year was the explosion of it, you know, that suddenly everyone started using it. This year, I think there's going to be clamp down. I mean, there's going to be, you know, regulators are really going to try to clamp down on it, or certainly provide robust guidelines, just because they have to, and it's developing so quickly that they have to do something, otherwise it will just run away with itself. So I thought, you know, so there is that about AI, but you know, I said in Watson's Yearly, which I published last week. So Watson's Yearly is the report that I have been writing since the middle of December, which summarizes last year's news, looks forward to this year, and does a roundup of G20 countries, and has themes to look out for this year. So within those, one of the themes is about AI and how I think it's going to be used for more specific purposes, in order to monetize, you know, the capabilities. So yeah, so that's definitely, I think, you know, something to be thinking about, and we'll see more. And by the way, the idea is that Watson's Yearly is something that you can refer back to, because pretty much every yearly report I've ever seen is useful for, you know, for a bit of time after it's been published, but then it lost its shelf life. The idea of Watson's Yearly is to try, I'm going to try as best as I can to update it throughout the year, so it is a live or reasonably live document, so you can come back and see developments within those themes as the year progresses. So that's the idea anyway. Do you have any other thoughts you'd like to ask?
No, not really. I don't think I can sum it up better than that, really. But yeah, like you said, much as last year was very much a woo AI kind of year, I think this year is going to be very much a ooh AI. Is that what are we doing with that sort of thing? It's a very different sort of vibe, and I think, like you said, people, there'll be a lot more, I think, like you say, scrutiny, criticism, regulation,
yeah,
and just making sure this technology that has a potential to do wonderful things isn't used for all kinds of malicious means, I think.
Absolutely.
That's a nice happy clappy note to finish on after starting with summer holidays, isn't it?
Exactly. Absolutely. I'll leave you to book your next cruise. Thank you very much for everyone for listening and following us. And thank you also for some people who've actually sent in messages saying, please bring the podcast back. When is it coming back? So here we are. Don't worry. We were just hibernating, so it's okay now. But anyway, thank you very much indeed. Have a great day, whatever you're up to, and we'll be back again tomorrow. Many thanks.
Thanks, Peter.
All right, bye.